Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday night. It's supposed to be an off night in the NBA, which we all need. But it wasn't an off night because McMahon ended up in Amarillo today, which is a different story. But joining us from Philadelphia, where he flew today from Miami, where he's covering the Sixers Heat series, the Heat are ahead 2-0, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys.
Joining us from Dallas, where he's home now after being in Phoenix and covering the Suns 2-0 lead against the Mavericks after a short stay in Amarillo, banned from DFW Airport for several hours, Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Yeah, the plane had to do a little holding pattern thing. And then ran out of gas, or was close to running out of gas. They should have just hooked up to the gentleman next to me, because that dude had plenty of gas. I mean, it was awful. Man, we're off.
We just got a text from McMahon. Plane running out of gas. Going to Lubbock. Guy next to me farting. That was the report.
I called him something a lot worse than the guy.
Yeah, all right. it's a little break in the series here. I got to come home after 18 days on the road for a couple of days. I'm covering the Celtics-Bucks series, which is 1-1, and we'll be talking about in a few minutes. Thought we would start, though, Bontemps, with your series. Probably been the least entertaining series to this point. Sorry for you. You drew the short straw. Sounds like maybe we'll know more when this pod is out. Embiid is listed as out for tomorrow at the moment, but it sounds like there's a chance he's going to play on Friday. This series to me has really been an illustration of the Sixers' shortcomings, which is not so much about what the Heat can do, although they've been good. And I wouldn't say great, but they've been good in what's otherwise been a pretty highly intense second round. This hasn't been the greatest series, but I think it's been revealing about the Sixers' current and present and future, because, James Harden's just been so disappointing. I didn't expect him to even split, but I thought they would be more competitive, Bontemps. And Harden just hasn't been able to impact games, which, you've been sounding the alarm on for a while. And it makes you really take a step back and evaluate where the Sixers are. What's your evaluation?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think through two games, this has gone just about as anybody would have reasonably expected it would go. I mean, when you take the finalists for the MVP award off your team, when you have DeAndre Jordan and Paul Reed playing behind him, and you're going up against Bam Adebayo, who's probably behind Jokic and Embiid, you can make a pretty damn good argument he's the third best center in the NBA.
He was on my third team all NBA.
That's a recipe for disaster, and that's how the series has gone. But certainly, when the Sixers traded for James Harden, they lauded him as a guy who was going to partner with Joel Embiid and lead them to the promised land. It was a guy who was capable of doing that. And while you can certainly look at this series and say that Miami is one of the best defensive teams in the league and has guys like PJ Tucker and Jimmy Butler who can lean on them, and they can take away space, and they can run the same off the defense that the Heat ran against Trae Young to great effect in the first round, when Trae looked completely the opposite of the way he tore through the playoffs last year. At the end of the day, if James Harden was still the top 5 to 10 player in the league he was billed as when the Sixers traded for him, he would be able to do something more than he's doing, which is simply being a nice complementary player who is very good at setting up an offense, very good at hitting guys with passes, but is not very good anymore at taking over a game by himself. And I mean, to me at this point, I look at him as really no different than the version of Mike Conley that the Utah Jazz traded for. A really good player, a guy who made the All-Star team last year, and a guy that is probably best suited to be at times your second best player, at times your third best player. And he just does not have the burst to be able to take over a game. Frankly, Tyrese Maxey has been a more scary offensive weapon for the Sixers in half court. He's able to get by guys and get to the rim and really distort Miami's defense in a way that James Harden is just not. So he's still a really good player, still a really good playmaker. But to your point, in this series, for them to be competitive without Joel Embiid, they needed James Harden to have a turn back the clock moment to what he was before. And the fact he has not been able to give any more than this is, to me, a pretty good indication that that's just not really going to be there for him.
No, he's their second best player when Embiid's not on the floor, when Embiid's not available. Tyrese Maxey's been the best player in this series. That was not the plan, and that is a potential $250 million problem.
That Tobias Harris has been the second best player in the series. Yeah.
Tobias is being better than Maxey. I mean, Tobias has had the best 6 weeks he's had maybe of his career. The past 6 weeks with the Sixers, he's playing level I did not think he could play at. He's been guarding Jimmy Butler well. He's been efficiently scoring. He guarded Pascal Siakam great in the last round. He's been really, really good. But look, at the end of the day, the Sixers said they traded for one of the top 5 or 10 players in the league, and James Harden has just not been that good.
Well, and when Harden tries to take over the game, it's like if you've got PlayStation 1 controllers and then you're in a PlayStation 5 console. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just not working for him. And Bon Temps, you obviously have a lot of experience in terms of that.
That's true.
I thought you were just gonna say that, McMahon, just let it go and let the percentage of listeners who knew the Bon Temps Twitter got hacked.
Who haven't muted him on Twitter already before he got hacked?
That was just going to be a little chestnut for the fans. Bon Temps Twitter got hacked over the weekend.
It was during the week. Yeah, rough week for the 76ers and for Bon Temps Twitter account.
Yeah. So one of the things I've been talking about, and I know it's an extraordinarily basic stat in today's day and age, but is just the number of shots that Harden mm-hmm. has been able to get up. You know, just he led the NBA in total shots in 2019 and 20. The last 2 years pre-pandemic, 1 year, he averaged 25 shots a game. And then when he went to okay, he was playing with Harden and Aaron, with playing with Kyrie and Durant. He averaged about 17 shots. And again, it's not even about how relevant that total is. It just, you know, shows, you know, where his baseline was. Since he's come to the Sixers, he's averaged 13 shots. He has never had a 20 shot game as a Sixer. He's had one 19 shot game.
It's crazy.
One 18 shot game. And other than that, it's just, he just can't get the shots because
he used to have 23 point attempt games.
Yeah. Yep.
I remember one time it was against the Warriors, and it was the game where he hit out of 35 foot or whatever at the buzzer to win it. It had 40 some odd points or whatever it was. And I remember he had 23 threes in that game, 23 3-point attempts in that game. It was like 9 of 23 or something like that. And yeah. I remember asking D'Antoni, you know, hey, what do you think of James getting up 23 threes in this game? And D'Antoni's response was just cracked. He just cracked up because his ability to create shots.
Yep.
Sometimes he wouldn't be on, sometimes he'd miss a lot of shots, but James Harden could always get shots. And there are times right now, this series is starved for James Harden to be able to create shots, and he just cannot do it anymore.
Absolutely can't. And look, that's the thing. That's the thing that's different about James Harden. He's still an elite playmaker. You know, JJ Redick has said a bunch of times this week, you got to look at more as a playmaker than a scorer. That's 100% true. But this guy used to be an elite playmaker and an elite scorer. And that was why he was one of the five best players in the world. It certainly wasn't because of his defense. And when you look at the way he's playing now, there's no fear factor anymore with James Harden. There's no fear that if you get up in him, he's going to get to the rim. Or if you take a step back off of him, he's going to hit that step back three on you. That's just not there anymore. So PJ Tucker, his old friend from Houston, can just lean on him all the time. And he can switch different guys onto him. And they can run stuff at him and not be worried about him being able to take advantage of it and attack them. And like I said, you saw in game two in particular, when Tyrese Maxey got going, he was able to use his speed and attack the defense and create more problems for Miami than James Harden was with the ball. And for that to be the case 2 or 3 months after this trade, you know, it sets up a lot of difficulties for Philadelphia to get out of this series. You know, even if Joel Embiid comes back in tonight's game, which I think there's a decent chance that he'll be able to, if he can get through the concussion protocols, but it sets up obviously far bigger questions for them this summer as to how much money they want to pay James Harden and what his role is going to be with this team going forward.
Yeah. So I said, if you were a basketball fan, but didn't know anything about the NBA and you went to the game Wednesday night in Miami and watched that game where Maxey, did he have 34 Bon Temps?
Yeah, 34 last night.
if you saw that game, you would say, boy, that young guard is really, really good. He's going to be their future. But what about, was Hardenwire number one?
Yeah.
What do you think about where, what do you think about number one? Oh, savvy veteran, you know, crafty, you know, he's definitely going to be like their, you know, he's got to be their veteran role playing playmaker. That's what you'd say. And if, you know, and that's why if you're the Sixers, if you were looking at this fairly and you didn't have the, you know, the overhanging thing that what you traded for him, you would probably say, okay, well, our center is our star. Our future and the guy that we need to construct around is the two guard. And, you know, Bontemps made a reference to Mike Conley. Well, when the Jazz traded for Mike Conley, they gave two firsts or one first in Grayson Allen.
They traded two first round picks, a good role player in Jay Crowder and Grayson Allen, the young prospect.
And Kyle Korver.
Which was salary at that point. Right. But it's essentially the exact same package that the Nets got for James Harden.
Well, minus Ben Simmons. I mean,
like you said, it's the exact same package.
It was Simmons plus that package.
I mean,
it's the same. Everything else checks out the same. Seth Curry, Jay Crowder, a couple first round picks.
Especially now that we know that Ben Simmons had a pretty significant back injury. I mean, it's possible that he herniated the disc when he was doing his ramp up with the Nets, which is when he reported the injury, but that seems unlikely considering he had back problems 2 years ago.
The problem's not what the Sixers gave up. It's what they have to pay. And it's the supermax.
Well, I'm just saying
black cloud hanging over that.
If you're trying to quantify this, you're like, well, we traded Ben Simmons, who was a difficulty for us. And he also apparently was pretty significantly injured. I mean, again, I don't have the information or the doctor's reports, but I find it hard to believe his disc was not herniated during the time of the trade, that he had to have surgery on today, Thursday. So like, if you look at it from that mindset and you're like, well, your Sixers traded two first Seth Curry and Andre Drummond for, you know, Mike Conley now, and Bontemps mentioned this to me earlier. Conley was 32 at the time of that trade. Harden is 32. Maybe he's 33 now.
It's turning 33, I believe.
And what contract did the Jazz give Conley? How much was that contract?
He signed, was about 24 a year.
Yeah. Like partial guarantee on the third year. You know, he still had a couple years under his contract when they got him.
Right. Well, I mean, Harden, he's not a $25 million player. He's worth more than that. But, like, he's not a $55 million player, which is what this
– Well, know, and I again, think. that's what sets up the interesting offseason for them. You know, we probably shouldn't get that ahead of it since they could still win a couple games here in Philly this weekend. But when you look at them going forward, James Harden is still a very good player, but he is not the guy that he was billed to be. And so that leads to the question, is he going to be paid like the guy he was billed to be, or is he going to be paid something less?
Let me ask you this. I mean, right now it feels doom and gloom and Sixer dumb, but if Embiid had played in those two games, you know, and we'll see if he plays this weekend, but if Embiid had played in those two games, Bontemps, 1-1 probably. I mean, is it 1-1?
I mean, I think you could argue that Philly could be up 2-0 in the series. I mean, Miami has not really impressed me very much. I mean, they hit a bunch of threes in game two, but they couldn't hit a shot in game one. Jimmy Butler got shut down by Tobias Harris in game one. And, you know, as we've talked about a lot with the Heat this year, you know, your boy Tyler Hero is really the guy that they have to go to generate offense in the half court. And, you know, Bam has been destroying them inside because they're going up against, you know, Paul Reed and DeAndre Jordan and Paul Millsap for a few minutes in game one. And then George Niang on a bad knee in game two. I mean, he fouled out in 10 minutes. And they tried to play him small.
That was crazy.
Like
that was crazy. I didn't realize that. You like said that in passing to me. He's like, well, George Niang fouled out in 10 minutes. I thought you were kind of like embellishing. No, he actually did foul out in 10 minutes.
Yeah, because they're trying. Because again, because that's the thing. Like, you know, people were criticizing.
Who was reffing? Was it Tony Brothers? Because man, he wore his whistle out game two of Mavs Suns.
He was busy at Mavs Suns later that night. But look, that's the thing. Like, there have been all sorts of criticisms here at Doc Rivers. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. Look, if you want to try to play small with this team, you got George on a bad knee. You got Matisse Thybulle, who's decided he doesn't want to shoot the ball anymore. He's been a mess ever since he wasn't able to go to Canada to play. You know, Danny Green is 2 for 14 from three in the series. You know, Doc dusted off Furkan Korkmaz yesterday. He played pretty well, but like, there's just not a lot of options here. You know, you take one of the five best players in the world.
Okay. But my point is stuck. Real quick, because we mentioned the officials. Did you guys see the video that the officials put out about Jack Harlow,
Scott Foster thing?
I mean, if you're very online, you probably know about this. If not, I encourage you to. Do you know what he's talking about, man?
Yeah,
I didn't even watch the video. I just saw it somewhere.
Yeah. Well, anyway, during the game one of the Celtics. Bucks the other night, they had Scott Foster wired for sound and Jack Harlow was sitting courtside. They showed him on the video board during a timeout, and Foster and Ed Malloy were talking about how they didn't know who he was, and that generated, you know, significant reaction. And so Scott Foster made a hastily produced yet still very funny video. Try to find the NBA refs account if you haven't seen it.
As James Harden's old pal Chris Paul once said, Scott Foster, he the man. That's who they pay to see. Can I be honest about something here? If not for the lemon pepper Lou Will saga during the bubble time, I might not know who Jack Harlow is either.
Well, it was just funny. Anyway, my point on the whole thing about Philly is that if Embiid was playing and if Tyrese Maxey was their young developing star and Tobias Harris was playing high level basketball and James Harden was your number 2.5 option, some nights two, some nights three, some nights maybe every once in 10 games, he gets up 19 shots and he scores 28 points. I mean, that would be a good team. It wouldn't be the team that they envisioned. It wouldn't be the team that that they would hope for, but it would still be a good team. And if depending on how high Maxey's ceiling is, who knows? I mean, I don't. I think, you know, you mentioned J.J. Redick. I was going on the shots kick. Well, you know, he can't get shots this week. And J.J., I was on a show with J.J., and Jay's like, J.J. goes, maybe you don't want him to take that many shots. Maybe if his efficiency isn't there, maybe 15 shots is fine. Maybe you don't want him to get it. And I thought that's a level-headed way of looking at it. Maybe this is just a new normal and James Harden will have this active his career and still be a productive player. But, you know,
well, like I said, it's not that he stinks. That's the thing. It's like, it's a more complicated thing than that. If he's not really like Russell Westbrook, who's just absolutely demolishing his team all year. I mean, you're talking about a guy who still is an elite playmaker and can do a lot of stuff to help you win games. It's just that, again, he was brought in here and trumpeted as a guy who is a top 10 MVP caliber championship level player, when really he's more of a borderline all-star 25th to 30th best player in the league. That's a good complementary piece. And that's just not what he was billed as. And that's why, you know, again, you look at these two games in Miami, the Heat were okay. They weren't great. Certainly, I think they're going to get drilled if they play like this in the next round against whoever they play. And, you know, these were games that Philly had on their plate that they could potentially steal one even without Joel. And while a lot of it was they went 14 for 64 from three, it also was the fact that the guy who was their best player is just not good enough to win that kind of game anymore.
And, you know, we've talked on the pod about how he did not pick up his option as was all assumed he was going to be, which means he could be a free agent at the end of the season. He also could pick up his option and extend off of that. He could pick up his option, get traded and extend. He could pick up his option and extend with Philadelphia, but he picks up that option for $47 million. You know, if he was an unrestricted free agent, would he get $47
million? No.
From anybody?
Nobody has $47 million. I mean, the Sixers could pay him that.
Well,
nobody else.
I mean, there could be signs and trades. I mean, you know, but I'm just saying, like,
He's not a $47 million player.
Right. No. Well, look, maybe Philly comes to him and says, James, do not pick up that option for $47 million and let's negotiate a 4-year contract. You know, but like now Philly may actually be like, actually, we're kind of happy he didn't pick up that option because we can now negotiate with him.
And you know what's crazy? You know who's playing like a $47 million player is Chris Paul. And Chris Paul last year could have made $44 million. He opted out and then re-signed a deal, taking a significant pay cut, which honestly, I you know, Chris Paul's a hell of a businessman. I still don't understand why exactly he did that.
Well, he did it in theory so that the Suns can keep this team together and pay DeAndre Ayton and pay Cam Johnson and maybe even spend some mid-level money in the offseason. I don't know if they are.
I don't understand why he did that. But and hey, if you want to be optimistic, looking at James Harden, you can say, hey, Chris Paul looked like he was slowing down a few years back. You know, look, he had hamstring trouble. He didn't have the same burst. He wasn't the same player his second year in Houston. Obviously, the Rockets made some rash decisions in part based on that. And look how he's bounced back. Now, do I think James Harden's going to go vegan and be just ruthlessly and relentlessly dedicated 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year to work on his body? No, I don't. I do not believe that.
So he had the hamstring injury in the conference finals against the Warriors, game six. And he came back for his second year with the Rockets, and he had another hamstring injury shortly before the All-Star break. Or maybe it wasn't shortly before the All-Star break. He came back after the All-Star break. He had it early, you know, midway through the first half of the season. That was when I believe, and I could have this timeline wrong, and please don't use it against me if I do. He began working out. He went to Miami and began working out with David Alexander, who has trained numerous NBA players as a personal trainer. I mean, like, there's a number of guys over the years who have been trainers who've been very successful. Tim Grover, David Alexander. The reason I even know who he is because his group helped LeBron when he had back problems at the end of his Miami years and then early in his Cleveland years. And his, you know, obviously LeBron did the work, but with his group's help, helped extend his dominating window. And I remember when he came back from being with David for a month or so. And in the second half of that season, he started looking different. And he is really, you know, he's obviously done the work and changed a lot more than just those workouts. But,
but he'd always been crazy dedicated and obviously put everything into it, but he changed the way he went about things. He had a strength coach who was a good friend of his, brought him from the Clippers to the Rockets, and he parted ways with him. At this time you're talking about, Wendy, because he felt like, hey, I've got to do something different. My body's not cooperating. I've got to figure out a way to not just extend his career, but get back to being the kind of player that he was before. And you know what? He's done it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, right now, Harden, as far as I know, I could be behind the curve on this. I'm not checking on it daily. I don't even think he's got an agent at this point. I know he has a business manager who helps him.
Yeah. His business manager is Lorenzo McLeod, who has been a friend of his for, you know, pretty much their whole lives.
Yeah. So Lorenzo played college at the University of the Pacific and played along with a family member of mine, and they made the NCAA tournament. So excellent college player. But I mean, I'm just saying, you know, that, and maybe, I mean, I'm just saying he doesn't have the full support staff that other players do. So, is there any world where he just picks up the option and tries again in a year? Is that possible?
I'd say anything's possible.
It's hard to see. I'm sure he's focused on this series, but it's hard not to let your mind wander. Before we move on, Bontemps, is there any, you know, you've talked about the Heat has been mildly underwhelming, if you can be underwhelming, being the number one seed and being up 2-0. But what have you taken away from watching the Heat these first two games, other than Tyler Hero's unstoppable firepower on offense leading him to win Sixth Man of the Year?
Their defense is really awesome and their offense is questionable. And it's the thing that I've been worried about in terms of them being a true championship level team. I mean, when they're when they've got their groups out there with Bam and, you know, when Kyle's healthy, Bam, Kyle, Jimmy, and PJ, that's a pretty devastating foursome of guys. And when they put Max Strus in there as the fifth starter, another big stocky guy who can switch, you know, he can, you know, bang on some guys, like their defense is really, really good. But in the half court, especially if they're not making threes, they can look pretty bad. And that's how they looked in game one. They went 9 for 36 from three in game one, and they hit half their threes in game two. And that's sort of what their team is.
You know, it's remarkable. You know, the Heat have started, and it's because of injury to Kyle Lowry. But you mentioned Max Strus. They've been starting two guys, Gabe Vincent and Max Strus, who are undrafted. And I don't know if they're at the minimum salary. Gabe Vincent might be slightly higher than that.
I think they're both their minimums.
But they both earn less than $2 million a year. And they are starting and being very effective.
Well, and Max Strus replaced another undrafted guy who now is making a lot more than $2 million, but came up in that same path.
Well, you know, Duncan Robinson hasn't played really at all in the series. He got some junk minutes in game two. How many minutes would Duncan Robinson and how many shots would Duncan Robinson get if he was on the Sixers?
A lot and a lot.
To illustrate, you know, the difference between these two teams in terms of depth.
Starting your own small business can be a total roller coaster. Between all the ups and downs, twists and turns, highs and lows, comes the actual business side of your business, which can really throw you for a loop. Luckily, with QuickBooks, you can get paid, run payroll, and know where your business stands from the start. So no matter how bumpy the ride gets, you can always stay on track. New business? No problem. Success starts with Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com. QuickBooks payroll, QuickBooks payments, and QuickBooks online account required.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. All right, McMahon, your series. I've spent a lot of time with the Suns this year, covered them in the last round, watched them lower the boom, particularly Chris Paul in the fourth quarter. Really three of the four games, pretty much won it in the fourth. They're at it again. Luka has been excellent, awesome in game one.
Offensively.
Very good, yeah. What's your takeaways from what you've watched the first two in this one?
I mean, the Suns are awesome. They are awesome. Everything you try, they've got an answer for. Chris Paul is the smartest player in the game. Last night was another Chris Paul fourth quarter masterclass. Not the whole fourth quarter, just the first half of it, because the damage was done at that point. He was just absolutely dominant. And they are basically they are saying, hey, we don't, if Luka scores 40 and has to work for it, we can live with that. We don't want the rest of the guys to get going. We don't want, you know, Brunson and Dinwiddie and you know, to get in a rhythm. We don't want Finney Smith and Bullock and these other guys, Maxi Kleba, you know, to get clean threes off of ball movement. And then they're just, I mean, they are as ruthlessly hunting Luka defensively as I've seen the entire
relentlessly.
Yes. The entire second half last night was screen after screen. Come on. Who's Luka's guy? Who's Luka? Bring that guy up time after time after time. And man, he got roasted. And you know, Devin Booker had his way with him. Chris Paul had his way with him. Hey, those are all stars. Those are superstars. There was a couple times Jay Crowder had his way with him. that was concerning. And you know, Jason Kidd, Sean Sweeney, you know, the Mavericks coach and staff, they've got to come up with some sort of a way to try to figure this out. But again, the problem is when you've got Chris Paul as the you know, brains of the operation and just his skill, you've got Devin Booker, you know, Bridges is a big time complimentary player offensively. DeAndre Ayton, who was in foul trouble a lot last night, so he wasn't even that big a part of it, was really big for the first three quarters of game one. You know, the Suns, plain and simple, like, I don't see how the Mavericks can beat him in a series. I don't know how the Mavericks can maybe even get this thing to six. Well,
haven't the Suns beaten them 11 or 12 times in a row?
Yeah, and so I didn't – yes. And a lot of that was, several of those games were Chris Paul closeout performances, you know, those type of things. Crunch time Chris Paul, crown jewel factor.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, Honeys factor. So the Mavericks are different. You know, the Mavericks, after trading Porzingis, right? Dinwiddie been a big part of their success down the stretch. They're a much better defensive team this year than they've been in years past. So I didn't necessarily put too much stock into that coming into the series. Recognize that the Suns were the clear-cut favorites because they've been by far the best team in the league. But again, at that streak, I didn't put much stock into this drastically improved Mavericks defense, though. They did not make the trip to Phoenix. It was Chris Paul and Devin Booker getting what they wanted when they wanted for pretty much the whole first two games. And especially in the second, they shot 84.2% in the fourth quarter last night. They shot 75. They had their true shooting percentage was 75.7% for the game. Our stats and info folks tell us it's the second best in any playoff game ever, topped only by the Clippers in game 5 of 2020, first round against
Dallas in the bubble.
Yeah. Your Dallas Mavericks. It has been, and the Mavericks would also be wise maybe not to fall in a double digit hole. They were able to climb out of it in game 2. Game 1, they never got out of it. That was wire-to-wire Suns. But it's funny because some of the Mavericks, playfully, they were perturbed that it was 20-0 on the ESPN predictions, and I particularly had to hear a little bit about it. I apologize to one of them. And I said, I apologize if you're offended that I think it's going to be a competitive series against the top seed in the entire league.
what did you pick? Suns in 7? Suns in 6?
And honestly, I thought that was kind of homering it up. I thought Suns in 6. I gave it an extra game so I didn't have to hear too much crap from people.
and
good luck getting there. I'm not picking against the Suns the next series, and I'm not picking against them the series after that. That's a championship team.
Yeah, I mean, I picked Dallas to win the series for a couple reasons. One, well, I wasn't sure.
20-0.
Well, I didn't submit it for. I tweeted it. I didn't put it on the site.
Oh,
I didn't.
Wait a minute. Why? Why not put it on the site if you're going to tweet?
Because
it?
I didn't
he could
have
blame the
picks.
He could.
No,
he could
I didn't
blame
have picks.
PS5.
I could have. Yeah. Blamed the hackers.
Yeah, he blamed the hackers. I would go with the hacker excuse after those first two games.
I mean, listen. I would say there's a couple things, right? Obviously, I wasn't sure what Devin Booker would look like. He has looked very good. Yeah. I thought Luka would be able to play really well in that series. He has played really well offensively. To your point, clearly the Mavs, if you're trying to look at what can they do to get back in the series, they need to get Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie involved earlier in the game, because we've seen this a lot with Luka. I mean, man, you've seen this all a ton of times, right? Luka has these incredible first halves. He's involved in every play. He's scoring all these points. And then he runs out of gas down the stretch and his offense kind of tails off and his defense tails off as a result. So they've got to lessen his workload, whether it's minutes, shots, touches, whatever. They got to get those other guys involved more, so he has gas at the end of the game to keep up for what you know, Brian's talked about it a bunch, right? Chris Paul is waiting there in the weeds the whole game to come out in the fourth quarter and punch you in the mouth. So you got to be ready to match that in fourth quarter. And the other thing too, look, the Suns have been incredible. The Suns may well win the championship. The Suns are also shooting an absolutely absurd percentage on long twos. Yeah. Like if you look at some of these numbers.
But who's shooting them?
Well, now listen. For as good as Chris Paul and Devin Booker are on these shots, and they're great at them, they're like 10 to 15 points better than their regular season and career numbers on these shots. Like, for to give people context, the Chris Paul and Devin Booker are great mid-range shooters, right? If you shoot somewhere around 50%, that's great on those shots. They're shooting north of 60% in the playoffs on these shots. Like, that is just not – that's not a sustainable number, even if you're awesome at it. So – at some point, I think that shot, that shooting has to normalize a little bit as this thing goes along. I'm not saying it will against Dallas, but that is the thing that I think if you're trying to pick a nit with the Suns and figure out why will they maybe not be able to beat a Celtics team or a Bucks team down the road, because I'm with you. Whoever they play out of the other series, I'm picking them to win for sure. I thought Dallas was the best opportunity to beat them in the West. That doesn't look like it's going to happen.
It could still happen,
but doesn't look like it's going to happen.
They're going to win 4 out of 5.
Well, probably not.
But I mean, they could scare them a little bit.
I do think the series could shift a little bit in their direction.
Chris Paul's health is everything.
And Devin Booker. I mean, Devin Booker, we've talked, like, he just had a hamstring issues, had a bunch. Chris has had a bunch of issues. Like, if they have all their guys, though, they're going to be really good. But, like I was saying, they shoot a lot of long twos, right? They don't get to the rim a ton. They don't shoot a ton of threes. They don't shoot a ton of foul shots. They execute brilliantly, and they take a lot of shots that they like, but they're not the most efficient shots. And they're hitting them right now at, like, they're like layups right now. I mean, if they keep shooting like that, like last night, I was sitting in the Heat media room with Friedel in the fourth quarter, and we were watching. It was just every time they came down, it was just Chris Paul bucket, Devin Booker bucket, Chris Paul bucket, Devin Booker bucket. It was like a video game. It was crazy. But
is that intentional video game comment?
I do think if you're Dallas, you could probably normalize that a little bit. You get Luka. It was not. It was just how it was. It was. But I just think ultimately, if you're Dallas, you got to get Luka more guests down the stretch. You got to get those other guys involved, and you got to, you know, count on Phoenix missing some of these shots that so far they've not.
And you know what? One really good way to get Jalen Brunson in the groove is to not have him get in really early foul trouble.
What happened
which
twice?
Which he's done both games, and that's a problem. And I'm Spencer Dinwiddie's had. He was very good in the closeout game in Utah. Other than that, he's not had a very good postseason. You know, Brunson obviously lit the Jazz up for most of that series. But Dinwiddie really, he was so good after the trade for the Mavericks, you know, through the rest of the regular season. He's not been that guy in the playoffs yet. And if they don't have at least one of those two guys, that, you know, forget about it.
Yeah, he's got to be, they both have to be better for them to have a chance for sure.
I see everything through LeBron prism. So sorry, I apologize. It took 6-7 years, and maybe even longer, really, because the LeBron championship machine didn't start till Eric Spoelstra started playing Bosch at center, and you totally spread the floor. Mm-hmm. But it took 6 or 7 years for the Cavs to figure out the personnel packaging and to acquire those players where LeBron could be optimized. In his 6th year, they won 66 games. In his 7th year, I think they won 62. Those were contenders. They weren't, it wasn't a crime that they didn't win the title. It was a disappointment they didn't make the finals, and that's why he left. But it took some time. I'm not sure that Dallas has completely figured out the arrangement that maximizes Luka.
Absolutely not. And the Porzingis trade was an admission of that. What they figured out was, hey, Porzingis is not going to be the co-star that is, Luka's going to win a championship with. Like that fit's not there. That's not working. Porzingis was not a positive trade asset. And that was the motivation behind that deal. Hope they could get Dinwiddie to play like he did down the stretch of the regular season. Hope they could get some quality minutes out of Bertans. And he actually, you know, has played okay here and there in this series. But that was a trade about, you know, getting more flexibility in terms of two smaller contracts that, you know, when there are trades, those are easier to move than Porzingis on a max deal. So that was a complete admission. This season for the Mavericks has been a step forward in terms of getting out of the first round. Also just in terms of, you know, kind of at least figuring out what's not going to work long-term in the future and trying to position themselves to, you know, have a chance to have more, better swings at it when there are opportunities.
And it certainly isn't going to be some kind of a crime if they don't beat Phoenix, right? To your point, right. Like they lost two hard fought series to the Clippers last year, which might have been the single worst matchup for them in the playoffs. They played them both really tough both years. And if they lose, you know, say they win one or two games at home here and they lose in 5 or 6 even to Phoenix, that's certainly not going to be a a disappointing outcome. Like, to your point, McMahon, there's a lot for them to build on going forward. This is just getting started, really, for them.
All right, trivia time.
Uh-oh.
Trivia is brought to you by CarMax. Shop online and on the lot with home delivery in select markets. Bon temps.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective trivia.
So, courtesy of Stats Williams.
What is your Twitter password? That's the trivia question. What is your Twitter password?
Courtesy of Stats Williams, our guy. Jason Tatum, through his age 22 season, which was last year. That's as of what your birthday is, as of January 31st in the year. So he turned 23 later on. But through his age 22 season, he played in 50 playoff games.
Wow.
There's four guys who, through their age 22 season, have played in more than 50 playoff games. Who are they?
Kobe.
Kobe's one of them.
LeBron.
LeBron is not one of them.
That was a trick. He's probably played in like 48.
Well, didn't he miss the playoffs his first 2 years?
Yeah, I was
that's
say,
true. He did. But to, I was thinking 22. Yeah, it would only be 4 years.
Right.
Yeah,
you okay. have to be drafted young on a, not just a playoff team, but a team that's winning playoff series.
Yeah. So it's all guys from the last, from this century.
Deshaun Stevenson.
That is not a, is not him no. either.
That would have been a good.
Are
any of these none of these other guys are, let me ask this.
Sure.
Are any of these other guys like perennial all-star type of players?
Yes. Three Hall of Famers.
Oh.
Wow. We should well, be better
I, okay. I should, let me rephrase. Three guys who are either are in or going to be Hall of
Famers. Carmelo Anthony.
Not him.
No, they didn't win playoffs.
Yeah.
Dwayne
Wade.
Nope.
No, he was like 22 when he came in. Older. Yep. All right, that was a foul.
That's why it's a tough question.
Yeah,
like I'm in early NBA on like a good team.
I'm thinking of the best, like like KG wasn't winning playoffs. Well,
definitely wasn't him. So let me give you another hint. There are two sets of teammates. Mm-hmm. So Kobe gives you one team, and then there's another team.
Devin George.
Not Devin George.
Devin George. Not Shaq. Shaq was drafted old.
Not Shaq. Nope. Played Shaq's position, though.
Andrew Bynum.
Andrew Bynum.
Yeah, Andrew
That's
Bynum.
The other Laker.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one other. I figured that would be the hardest one. When you come up with the other team, I think you'll get this pretty quick. So the other two guys played for another team that was in the playoffs all the time. And they played really young and played a lot of games right away. And they're both going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh.
We're going to feel dumb when we don't get this.
Yeah.
Well, just think about teams that have been in the playoffs all the time for the past 20 years.
Steph and Clay.
Tony Parker.
Tony Parker is one of them.
It ain't Duncan, is it? Duncan is a four-year guy.
No.
Bruce Bowen.
No. Who else was
I obviously
in the Hall of Fame?
How dare you?
Who is another Spur who's going to be in the Hall of Fame?
Kawhi.
Who walked it. And Kawhi Leonard is the
other. I forgot.
All right. You walked us through that one. All right.
We'll take
good
credit.
One. That was a good one.
That's all credit to Stats Williams, our guy.
All right. So the series I'm covering, Milwaukee, Boston.
Good lead in. I was hoping we'd go into that after the Tatum question.
Jason Tatum played a very, very professional second half of game two. I don't know if it got recognized as much because Jaylen Brown was on fire at 25-point first quarter. So in the first round against Kevin Durant, Boston put forth a defensive strategy and execution on Durant that I've rarely seen. That effective. They were extremely physical with him, bothered him, used their length, used their depth at those positions, really gave him problems. Durant ended up shooting 38% in that series. He had some points, but not efficiently. Mm-hmm. And he had averaged 5.3 turnovers per game. They got up into him and bothered him, and he just wasn't great. Two games into the Bucks series, Giannis. 38% shooting, 5 turnovers average per game. In game one, the Celtics really collapsed on Giannis. It was very effective. He was only 9 of 25 shooting. He fed his teammates on the perimeter and they knocked down a bunch of threes. Had a great shooting game. I think they had 13 threes, which is very good for Milwaukee. In game two, they stayed home more on him. Al Horford and Grant Williams being the primary defenders. And they got out to the shooters a little bit. And also Milwaukee just missed shots. And they only went, I think they only made three threes in the game and got handled. And that's the way I think they're going to play going forward, sort of daring Giannis. Giannis is 7 of 24 shooting against Al Horford as a primary defender in the two games. And he's 5 of 13 against Grant Williams, who had the best game I've ever seen him play in game two. I don't know if this will last. And certainly you have to agree at that Chris Middleton missing is a factor, but the defense and, you know, but in game two, in fairness, Marcus Smart was out. The defensive level that the Celtics are playing with, the game plan discipline, the just, I'm going to step up here and handle my business. I'm going to, because what they've really done is got up into Giannis. They want to be up into him so they can't swing his arms around. He can't move. I mean, they're practically standing on his toes. And he just constantly looks uncomfortable. And it kind of like Durant, it's kind of different there. But
you know what? I know he shot 9 of 25 in game one. He dominated that game. He didn't look uncomfortable in that game.
Yeah, he wasn't uncomfortable in game one. He was just missing shots.
Yeah.
The Low Post podcast brings you some of the best insights into the world of the NBA, hosted by NBA insider Zach Lowe. Playoffs are here and Lowe will be there with what you need to know. Listen to The Low Post wherever you find your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. He didn't look comfortable with the ball. That's
an insane statement. He missed shots in game one. You want to say the Celtics knocked him off his spots a couple times and that helped him miss some shots? Yeah. He was definitely comfortable with the ball. He was diming up guys on the perimeter for threes.
No, and they were like
down the court.
Yeah, there were four or five passes he made where he drove and collapsed the defense, and they were spectacular. Like,
One time he threw a howitzer. He went under the basket and did this hook shot howitzer pass. Like, I thought it was going to take the guy's head off who we threw it to. I mean, he was incredible in that game.
He's really good. He's really good. I agree.
He's the best player on the planet. But he was not. That's all I'm saying. He wasn't uncomfortable with the ball. Yeah, and that was the problem.
All right. Well, I'm not going to split hairs. They were very good on him. In game one, they were outstanding in game two.
In the first half, he was really uncomfortable with game two. He got rolling in the third quarter.
Yeah.
It was too late. The Celtics had, and plus the Celtics shot the hell out of the ball in the first half. And that was over by halftime. But game one, and I know the shooting line was ugly, but he was an absolutely dominant force in that game.
He was a dominant force, but he was a dominant force as a distributor, which is what they want. So
I would actually disagree with that too. That's not what they want. They lost game one because they allowed the other guys on the Bucks to beat them. That was why they lost game one. they lost game four for two reasons. One, they couldn't hit a shot. And two, they let the other guys hit shots. And in game two, the difference was they didn't let those guys even get shots off. I think they only had 15 three-point attempts the entire game in game two. Right? That was clearly Ime Udoka talked a lot about it going into game two. They're like, look, we overhelped on Giannis in game one. And we went recklessly to try to help him and defending him. And we gave up open threes. And we can't do that. We got to stay at home.
I mean, if you guys want to split hairs, fine. Their defense on Giannis in this series in the two games.
I know,
games
but Brian, you're,
excellent.
I mean, you're fund. I know it was, but you're kind of fundamentally distorting what the Celtics did in game two. The whole point was to not let the other guys beat them.
Yeah. But listen, man, they still had plenty of guys around Giannis. I know that they didn't collapse exactly the same way.
Well,
they did a little bit more 2.9 defense, but.
Well, yeah, that's entirely the point though. They gave up 15 3-point attempts the entire game. That's an insanely low percentage in today's game. Like that was the whole game plan.
It was 18, but still.
Right.
They went 3 of 18.
I was thinking it was 3 of 15 instead of 3.
Modern NBA teams don't win going 3 of 18.
Yeah. Like that. You're obviously going to send other guys to Giannis. You can't single cover him no matter who you have the whole game. That's the point. But in game one, they were not only missing open threes on offense, they were giving up open threes on defense. And that's the recipe for disaster against the Bucks, and especially the Bucks without Chris Middleton, because you don't have to worry about a lot of these other guys unless they're standing there hitting an open three. So now they're making Giannis take all these tough shots. You're 100% right about how they're guarding him. Like it's incredibly hard for him to get clean looks, which is not something he's used to. But that to me was the key difference in game two, is that they said, we're going to make Giannis take all these hard shots. And we're not, like McMahon said, going to allow him to dime guys up all over the place and get them open shots. If they do that, I don't think the Bucks can score enough to beat them if they play like they did in game two. If they play like they did in game one and let Grayson Allen and Pat Connaughton and Bobby Portis get open three-pointers to get feeling good, then I think it gets a lot harder to guard the Bucks as the series goes along.
Well, if they hold Giannis to that efficiency level, and I understand he did have a good second half, but they still it was a very acceptable efficiency level. Mm-hmm. If they hold Giannis to that kind of efficiency level and they're going to force him into those turnovers like that, they're going to have a great chance. And Middleton has been ruled out of games 3 and 4. After that, Mike Budenholzer said, we'll see. I don't know if you can.
Seems extraordinary. That. I shouldn't say extraordinary. It seems very unlikely he's going to be able to play by every account in the series.
Yeah. At this point, I would agree. The Celtics, you know, they only played 7 guys in game two because Marcus Smart was out. The rotation is tight. They're not getting much offensively at all from Derek White. They praise his defense, and all their defense deserves praise, in my opinion. They praise his defense, but they really got game two done with, you know, 4 offensive options, 4 or 4.5 offensive options. I mean, Peyton Pritchard's out there, and if you leave him wide open, he can burn you. But you know, you're not running plays for him. So their margin is kind of, they need things to go right, but the defense is just spectacular. And
well, they've got a chance to have the best defense I've ever seen with this group. Like you go those top 7 guys, like the best defense I've seen in the modern era, certainly while I've covered the league, is the 2019 Raptors that won the title, where they had smart, high IQ, awesome defensive players just about at every spot. And the Celtics top 7 guys, their starting lineup of Marcus, you know, Smart, Tatum, Brown, Horford, and Robert Williams, and then Grant Williams and Derek White. Those 7 guys, they're all plus defenders. They're all big for their position. They all physically could get into people. And like what you're talking about, Brian, with Giannis, Ime Udoka, when he's talking about his team, he always uses the word physical. He wants them to be physical and up in guys and aggressive and be physically imposing. Kind of like he is on the sideline. I mean, you see him walking around the sideline. He looks every bit the former player.
Oh my God.
Walking around on the
he
sideline.
He is an absolute house.
Yeah. He's a beast.
My God.
And he, oh and his God. Teams play, his teams play a lot like he did. Like he has the Celtics playing like he did as a player. Like he ground out a career as a guy who was a, you know, 8th, 9th guy who worked his ass off on defense and got up into guys and hit a spot up 3, but he was a guy who grounded out on defense and turned himself into a player.
I'll tell you what, man, it was just nothing easy. They fight you on every screen. If you don't have, like, if you go weak to the rim, like if you kind of are too slow or you get a bad angle and you put up kind of a weak shot, number 44, Robert Williams just eats it. He's just like, you can't lollygag, you know, even when you've got an open look, you got to do it. Because if you are a little bit out of sorts and you give him time to rotate over, wham, he's there.
Well, and they've been smart.
The last
few months when they really took off, they sort of put him into a permanent help spot where they don't, like, he can isolate defense really well too, but they try to have him playing and help side defense as much as possible. And then when anybody does drive, like you said, he comes flying over to smack the shot into the second row. But you know, like they could switch with any of those guys. Like Marcus can guard centers. Grant Williams can guard, you know, Kevin Durant and Giannis and guard guards and bigs. Like
Al Horford can guard guards.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talked about it a lot, that play, that sequence at the end of game one against the team we don't talk about anymore. When, you know, Al Horford came on and off Kyrie two or three times in that one possession defensively to make sure Kyrie didn't get a shot off. Like
Al Horford halted the revolution.
they're incredibly gifted off defensively. And like I said earlier, I think whoever wins this series, to me, barring injury, I think they're going to take care of presumably the Heat in the conference finals. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be a hell of a finals, you know, again, health permitting, we're far ways away. But if either of these two teams is healthy playing the Suns in the finals, we're going to be in for a treat.
Yeah, and Giannis can do so much. We're haggling back and forth about his play in game one. I don't think he played even that well, but he's so good and so talented and so assured about himself that he can make plays. And he made a whole bunch of plays in game one. He's going to need to be full Giannis to have them get three more wins in this series. It's going to be fun to watch.
Does it take a little athleticism and confidence to throw it off the backboard to yourself for a dunk in a half court set in a playoff game?
That was a wild play.
I was glad I was
in the building for that one.
Might have walked on that.
He definitely walked, but it was still great.
He tried to do it again in game two. It didn't quite work.
Okay,
and
John Morant carries the ball sometimes. Stop crying.
That's true.
Enjoy the highlights. The
transition.
Yeah. Before we get to that. All right. So here's the situation is this. It's a new month, McMahon. And that means it's time for your spotlight. And we have been requested to rename this segment by our boss, Andrew Hahn. Wah, wah, wah. In case it could be sponsored
Andrew, the
someday.
Hitman Hahn.
And I know that no self-respecting sponsor would want to put their name on something that resembles male anatomy. So here is Tim McMahon with this month's crowned jewel. I'm not saying that name is going to stay. Crown jewel player of the month, McMahon.
All right. So basically, I'm making this the... I don't care about the last couple weeks of the regular season. We're not, you know, it's April. We're not worried about that, right? When we give this award out for April, we're talking about the first round of the playoffs. And so, you know, that's what we're looking at for the crown jewel player of the month in April.
Jackson says we can keep calling it Cajones until it gets sold. So it's going to be Cajones. We're back to Cajones. We're back. We're back, baby.
Cajones factors back, baby, until the crown jewel pays off. So let's just run through them real quick. We will start off with the bronze medalist. This is everybody's favorite MVP runner-up. I believe
bring the microphone back from your face. He got so excited. He got, my bad.
I pulled a bomb Timbs from last week.
Yeah.
Hope I don't get hacked because of it. But hey, man, Joel Embiid, you thought it was the first like turnaround buzzer beater ever by a 7-footer. That may or may not be the case, but the man did hit a playoff buzzer beater to win game three. Then he went for 33-10. In an elimination game, when it looked like the Sixers might be on some shaky ground, he basically said, "Nope, that ain't the way it's going." Unfortunately, he took an elbow when his work should have been done Not sure why it was up or in the game up 29, but that doesn't factor into this award. Looking forward to the return of the Phantom of the Process, hopefully soon, but Joel Embiid, the bronze medal of the crown jewel. Sure. The silver medal, the closeout king. And boy, this has continued into this series, but just what Chris Paul did in that series against the Pelicans. I mean, you talk about putting the finishing touches on a series, 14 of 14. Mm. He basically pitched a perfect game in game six, 33 points. His fourth quarter stats for that series, 61 points on 66.7% shooting, 18 assists, and only four turnovers. And then, you know, this is an award that's given out for a combination of clutch performance and swag. I did award bonus points for the pettiness of pretending not to know how to pronounce Jose Alvarado's name after old Grand Theft Alvarado. You know, he didn't get the best of CP3, but he hounded him pretty good all series long. He certainly, he pestered him well enough to where Chris Paul knew how to say the man's name, and he had to pretend that he didn't in the post-game six press conference. I award bonus points. The P in CP3 is for petty, and he shined in that role after that. So he got some bonus points for that. But the
who
gold
beat
medals,
these guys? Jeez.
All right, come on, dude. This one really wasn't hard. Ja Morant, as his father T so eloquently said, pretty much played like trash by his standards in the first round, except for when the Grizzlies really needed him to come through. And it was almost like he was playing with the Timberwolves. Oh, look at those cute little double figure leads you have going in the fourth quarter. Let me snatch that one. Let me snatch that one. Let me snatch that one. And obviously the most impressive work came in game five when not only did he give Malik Beasley a close-up view of the crown jewels on a spectacular dunked in near the end of the third quarter and to kind of just pump life into that crowd. But the man scored 18 points in the fourth quarter. That's not just the most in a fourth quarter in Grizzlies playoff history. It is the most in any playoff quarter by a Memphis player. That included the last 13 points. Capped that with the game-winning layup. we won't talk about Ant Edwards, his defense on that play. I think we've touched on that last week. And I know you look at everything through the LeBron prism. The last time a player 22 or younger scored that many consecutive points to close out a playoff game was LeBron James. And obviously this is a Stats Williams, stats and info
in Detroit, I assume in 2007,
the final 25, then unforgettable win over Detroit. 48
special.
Yep. Yeah. So you have to go back that long to find a guy that young, you know, closing out a game like Ja did. And then
I'm going to tell you something. It wasn't with the kind of style that Ja had. That was an absolute grind fest. There was nothing pretty about that game.
Right. And then Ja, you know, he got his little gritty in on the Timberwolves home floor. The one thing I really would have wanted to see from Ja in that moment, because he's top five trash talker in the league. He's definitely right up there. Mm. And there was a lot of that back and forth in that series. I would have loved to see Ja jump up on that Minnesota scorers table and celebrate that playoff series victory. I would have loved him to jump right up on Pat Bev's play-in spot and celebrate that series win.
Right on that, on his footprint there. Oh man. Well, listen, Ja was great. And it was the, you know, he was hitting floaters. He was hitting step backs. He was hitting scoop layups. I mean, you know, all this nonsense about the bag these days. Well, that bag was on display, which is appropriate for this award.
And also a perfect segue in the little Warriors Grizzlies.
That's right. Warriors Grizzlies.
You talk about full. I mean, my goodness. Wow. Wow, wow. Ja in game two. And it's unfortunate circumstances because Gary Payton II was obviously in the starting lineup for one reason, because he was their guy to not stop Ja, but do your best containing him, stay in front of him, make it tough on him. I don't, especially with Iguodala, he's out at least another week. You know, kind of doubt he plays in the series. We'll see. Man, I don't know like, how are the Warriors going to figure this out? Ja in game two, I tell you what, the answer ain't like Jordan Poole. Oh, no. I mean, dude, he had Jordan Poole facing the wrong way, falling down while he's finishing with a pretty little
floater. Playing basketball on ice.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, though, it's interesting because I think – so say the Grizzlies win this series. I'll tell you what the Suns are going to do. The Suns are going to attack him like they're attacking Luka, and they're going to make him work really hard on the other end of the floor. That's just like the Warriors have never been a hunting team. You know, that's not their style of play.
It's not Steve's style at all.
And so, you know, I don't know.
They run a democratic offense. They don't run a dictatorship. I just want to point out, you know, in game two, which the Warriors lost by 5 on the road, in which they lost one of their best defensive players on a dirty play.
Mm-hmm.
They were 7 of 38 from three, which is one of the worst shooting performances the Splash Brothers have ever had. And I agree that Clay has not looked his best, but he was 2 of 12. They go home. I think you're going to see a little bit better shooting from them. If you're looking for a problem that the Warriors have, it is first off, Steph hasn't shot the ball great. He's had a couple of decent games, but I think he's shooting around 40% or less overall. He hasn't shot the three ball well. Their quote unquote new death lineup, I think it's minus 11 the first two games. I mean, Jordan Poole is not Andre Iguodala. They are not able to play the same level of defense with that group. So that is a challenge as Steve Kerr looks to balance how his lineups are going to go.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are factors as to why I think the Warriors haven't hit max RPM. But of course, the Grizzlies have a lot to do with that. And, you know, the Grizzlies haven't gotten Jaren Jackson, who just has got to stop fouling. And, you know, their starting lineup, you know, listen to the starters the other night in a game that they won.
Mm-hmm.
Jaren Jackson, 3 of 14, 12 points. Dylan Brooks, 3 minutes, got ejected. It was 0 of 3. Xavier Tillman, 3 of 4, 7 points. I know he doesn't play that many minutes, but, you know, he was the best. Dez Bain, who's been awesome this postseason, and I know he played good defense, gave nothing on offense.
He was playing with a bad back, and it showed in that game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
they get Steven Adams back, and I'm curious to see how that goes. You know, he's in health and safety protocols. You know, but they pulled the plug on him after game one of that Minnesota series, just because, you know, Cat's a terrible matchup for him.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see exactly how they use Steven Adams. Does it go back to what it was all regular season long, where he's playing starters minutes? Brandon Clark has been phenomenal in the playoffs. You know, I still think you want Brandon Clark playing 25, 30, maybe even more minutes than that. But I am curious to see, you know, how they use Steven Adams and how he looks coming back off of COVID.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think on the Warriors side, look, going back to when they were winning 73 games, they've always struggled with long, young, athletic teams. Like, you go back to, you know, McMahon's pal Jason Kidd down there in Dallas. When he was in Milwaukee, they were running some crazy, you know, double schemes and stuff. You're trapping and flying around. And didn't work against a lot of teams, but they had a lot of success against Golden State. And the early Celtics teams under Brad Stevens that were, you know, had like Avery Bradley and young Jaylen Brown and Jay Crowder, those teams with a bunch of rangy athletic guys would give the Warriors some trouble. This Memphis team is certainly full of athletic guys like that. And, you know, you mentioned McMahon, no Gary Payton. They don't have anybody to guard Ja now. That's going to be a challenge for them. And, you know, I think on the other side, you're talking about Golden State's offense. I mean, you know, this death lineup, quote unquote, people are talking about, like you said, Brian, Jordan Poole ain't Andre Iguodala, and Andrew Wiggins ain't either Harrison Barnes or Kevin Durant. Like, the secret thing about those lineups was they were big. Like, they could guard centers with those groups. Those lineups are really, really small.
Yeah, like, that lineup, you're trying to outscore people. The other lineup, right, you were just dominating.
You could do it at both ends, right? Mm-hmm. They have to come in and score a ton of points, and I'm not sure they're only going to do that if they're bombing threes, which sometimes they're gonna. But if they're not, they're going to be suspect. And then there's the other part of that, which is the Draymond offense thing is a real problem now. You know, he is just absolutely not guarded at all. It's you're almost playing 4-on-5 sometimes. He's catching the ball at the top of the key. He's only looking to pass. He had the play at the end of game 5 against Denver when it was basically the Ben Simmons play against the Sixers, which he, of course, then went on his pod and he immediately told the world how it wasn't like the Ben Simmons play, which I thought said a lot. And, you know, I think the Grizzlies have the ability to play off him and take advantage of that. And I'm curious to see how that goes going forward in the series, because the Warriors did not get going on offense in game 1 until he was out of the game. And they were not, they, like you said, Brian, in game 2, they didn't shoot the ball well. The offense wasn't great. You know, I'm curious to see what that matchup looks like going forward in the series, because I'm not sure it's a great series for Draymond on offense, and that could be a problem for them.
Well, and if they have a transition issue, when I say transitioning to playing without Gary Payton, and they don't have a good game 3, which I expect them to do it. But if it's 2-2 coming out of there, I mean,
other thing to remember, now starting Saturday, it's an every other day series. And you got to think that's going to favor Memphis going forward. Way younger team. Obviously, Jaws had some health issues. If he gets banged up, that's a problem. But the Grizzlies, you would think, as the series goes on, are going to probably do better playing every other day for 9 days than the Warriors are.
Yeah. So, the Warriors, I do expect a market correction where Steph hits 8 threes and they make their shots and they just wallop the Grizzlies. And well, if
Memphis
that happens,
can't get out of their own damn way half the time. So they'll probably do a bunch of dumb stuff and screw it up. But it's going to, this series is fascinating. I'm really glad it's the Celtics and Celtics Bucks. And this is opposite me. So I can just sit and watch these games on these off days. Cause those have been just awesome games so far. It's going to be a really fun series.
All right. Well, it's getting towards midnight right now on the East Coast. So I want to thank Bontemps and McMahon. Thanks to our producer Jackson. Thanks to Andrew on the video team who stayed up late with us tonight. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. Enjoy the playoff games this weekend. It's going to be a lot different when we next talk to you early next week. Look forward to it.
Adios, amigos.
Crown Jewel.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.